Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I suppose you want to hear a little bit more about Ingram running. I hear a loud shudder somewhere near the center there. It's quite remarkable today that we have sorted out as much as we have sorted out from life. A lot of people believe that Scientology is shifts and changes. No, it just doesn't change and shift, it grows. There's very, very little that has been established as factual axioms and things of that character over a period of time that has changed. Very, very little. In fact, we've got just about everything that we have had all the straight way along the line. But there's one difficulty about it. How do you get somebody to start in some place where they can understand it and carry on from that point outwards? That's an interesting thing, isn't it? How do you find somebody at a level of reality and expand his level of reality? What is his level of reality? Estimating the case is one of the most remarkable activities and endeavors which anybody ever engaged upon. We used to call it obnosis. We still can call it obnosis. And where individuals fail in observation, they fail in cases and they fail in life. Had many a fellow come in, something like a bad leg, and tell me that what was troubling him was his headache. And after processing him for a considerable length of time, to have him have a huge cognition, he had a bad leg. That's all right for you as an auditor, or you as a Scientologist. It's all right for you as somebody interested in this subject to look at society and know what's wrong with it. It's quite something else for the society to be found at the level it is found at. Yes, you know what's wrong with it. Your obnosis and case estimate is as to what's wrong is quite good. But there's one that goes right along with this. One that goes straight along with this. And that is, what does he realize? What does the society realize? And that's equally important. Because regardless of what you estimate and what you realize, somebody else has to realize something too, right? There's two sides to this thing. So part of your case estimation of a society is perforce what they regard as reality. In other words, obnosis, all right? That is a subject which looks at somebody and knows what is right and what's wrong with him. All right, there's a little bit further to this. And we'd call a case estimation, in other words, an intention to do something about this person, not just obnosis, to be one step further than this. And that would be to find out where he sat so that he could get some reality and some entrance into this. There's nothing more horrible than somebody who doesn't know that he doesn't know. This is the wildest thing you ever saw. You sometimes see somebody monkeying with a piece of machinery, you know, monkey with it and so forth. And they casually turn around and tell you they're an expert on it. They haven't got it running yet, you know. They don't even know where the on-off switch is. They know all about it. They can't be told anything about it. They don't know that they don't know, which is about the wildest thing you ever cared to engage yourself with. Now, modern psychology, that term didn't apply after, I don't think, 1910. I don't know why I'm using it. Let's be more factual. 19th century psychology never found out that it didn't know and went over here on a detour and then knew all sorts of things about things that didn't have any bearing on the situation. For instance, naming the parts of the mind, where they say the mind is a brain. So we have naming the parts of the brain as an integral system of the psyche. Now, what's the psyche got to do with the brain? Well, they sometimes get connected. But how about a psyche that gets so connected with the brain that it thinks it's a brain? Oh, boy. What? Whoa. Now, this individual doesn't know that he doesn't know. He thinks he knows. And you could work on him gently with hammers, sledgehammers, mowing machines. He just sit there complacently. He doesn't even know that a mental subject, to be valid, must be able to handle and certainly to change the mind. If a mental subject doesn't have for itself a goal, and if it doesn't change anybody's mind, and if it doesn't make life better or even worse, certainly it is no mental subject. It has no use. And it's a wonderful thing to come up against one of these people and try to get him to look or realize or think or do anything about the mind. Oh, he says, that's obvious. He says, rats, rats, rats. You say, no, no, no. You say, no. No, no, just a minute, just a minute, no. Got a little boy, and he's not able to learn. And he's not able to learn, and he's supposed to be going to school, and he's supposed to be learning, and he'll not come out very well as a citizen, and he's no real asset to the society, to himself, until he gets so that he can learn. Now, in Scientology, we take him, we work him over so that his alertness comes up so that he can learn. Oh, yes, rats. Rats, 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 rats. Parts of the brain, parts of the brain. You can't do anything about backward children because they have their medulla oblongata completely crossed with their tibia, obviously. You say, no, no, no. Now listen. You say the child, backward child, could be straightened out so he could learn something. Hear me? Rats, rats. Now, what about a whole society that's sold on this philosophy? What about a whole society? Boy. Boy. That would seem to be quite a job. Overwhelming. Absolutely overwhelming. They even teach this in high school now in the United States. High school kid goes in. They say, well, now you have to take your psychology. They go in. They sit down. Well, the professor says, the first thing you must learn is there's nothing you can do about it, and we don't go anywhere. But if you learn factually all the parts of the brain, and if you learn all of the names and addresses in the textbook, why, you've made the course. Particularly if you know nothing can be done about it. Because the mind cannot be changed. And that is the common denominator of 19th century psychology. Not only cannot be changed, but never changes under any condition. Well, now you're looking at a psychosis. This is a psychosis. This isn't just a neurosis. This is absolute gibber. Someday, I'm going to get a couple of Scientologists and hang special agents badges right under here. I'm going to get them to grab all of the psych majors coming out of a class and give them tests of the same kind they took when they were freshmen. And I'm going to compare these two graphs. Now I'm going to take the professor, the chair of psychology there, and he's going to rub his nose in them good. Because they're down. way down. Now, if these people can't change, what are they doing? Deteriorating. Now, how do you like that? That's a change, too. I know one auditor looked at a graph one day. The person had been one of these false high graphs, you know. The individual's running on a total social response, so he does the graph, you know, and it's way up at the top. The individual's cross-eyed, got absolutely can't function in any way whatsoever, reaches for his nose and touches his right hand, you know. Runs way up here at the top. An auditor that didn't know this trick, that the graph really goes circularly when it's falsely high, and then a little bit of auditing comes in at the bottom. They'll do this. And then goes up and stays that way. And this auditor had audited the PC for a week. And he'd started in with this nice high graph. And he thought, what a high-toned PC, because the PC said so. Donate. And after a week's auditing of the PC, took another graph, and it was lying on the bottom like an expired snake. And the auditor looked at this and got a big, long calm leg. And he finally says, well, at least I changed her some. Yes, even that's a change. So when we get a person who says the mind never changes, then he is saying that an individual, before and after one quart of booze, drives equally well. Well, there are wrecks out here in the junkyard in great number that prove that one quart of booze can change somebody's ability to drive. That's for true. So there is something that can change somebody. And I'm afraid you'd have to enter into as crude a series of demonstrations as this to finally knock out this nonsense that is being foisted off on the society from a decayed past century psychology. People not only can change, but do change. Now, a demonstration of this tends to invalidate a subject, and therefore is not very acceptable. So what would you do to get somebody to agree that there was some point of reality and that it could be improved? Well, it all comes under the head of bring order. Bringing order. I asked this individual, he says, what is this thing, Scientology, that you're mixed up with? You know, nice, polite fellow. Why give him a definition? Why tell him anything? No, there's two things you could do. A person that could run engrams by Scientology. Matter of fact, there's practically a drill on this. We tell ACC students toward the end of the course. How do you demonstrate Scientology to a group of people? You take one person who looks like that person can run well, run them through an engram enough so that it won't hang up. Take an hour. Now, the next person who walks up to you and says that can't be done and is highly critical, of course, is the next engram you run in the next hour. You just run an easy one, and this guy, who is the bell wearer for the group, you see, he's very critical about it. You run him through something. Run him through a good deep one. And just leave it up to that and put your e-meter away and go home. That has a certain level of reality. These two people who have always been nice, sweet, kind on the one hand, and bitter, savage, critical on the other hand, have neither one of them ever been heard to scream that loud before. And you helped them out, and they had a little more reality on the track, and you always tucked your card in their pocket so they come to see you and get the thing flattened. This group has been subjected to an impingement. Now, that is a technical thing, an impingement. We used to do it with finger snaps. We used to say, when I snap my fingers, an age will flash, you know, finger snaps. Well, finger snaps are back full force. But actually, finger snaps are an impingement. They alert the person to something. They're a little impact. Got the idea? Little impact. And that makes an impingement. Now, society can be given a few impingements, as in this group demonstration. Get the idea? That's an impingement. They've heard somebody go into some very unnatural sequences and suddenly start saying, well, here I am sitting here under the blade of the guillotine, and it's starting to come down. No, there it stopped. And the rest of the group saying, hypnotism. And the auditor says, the somatic strip will advance through the next 10 seconds. And the person goes, yeah. Chop. Silent. And the audience says, I don't know what we're looking at. Run the person through this a little bit longer, and they're in the cart and so on, and then they go back to an overt where they slaughtered a bunch of the peasantry and up through the guillotine and so forth, and it's getting realer and realer and realer. They're more and more in the incident. It's got more and more kick and less kick, and this person is going through some of the strangest contortions, and the audience does not know what's going to happen. But that's an impingement. A heavy alertness. That has been made. And very often, a well-known auditor misses this point entirely because his own presence and reputation is an impingement. The idea? We used to also call it altitude. But impingement is what we ought to be talking about. That's why I'm not auditing anybody through engrams on the stage. I don't want to make an impingement on you. I don't have to. Here's this individual who is very doubtful. Well, he must have been impinged upon to some degree to get that doubtful. It's all unreal to him, and it's something that should be protested against. So he must be sitting right in the middle of his own bank, and the engram's all ready to be run. Thud. Well, now that's one way to introduce Scientology to somebody. But how about a much gentler fashion whereby he actually can get some reality on it? And then, if we run an engram, we bring some order to the bank. But how about just bringing order to some part of his own life? How about just talking to him about it? Oh, this individual knows what is wrong. He knows clearly everything that is wrong with his whole life. Knows it thoroughly, clearly, completely. Knows it's because his mother beat him every day. That's what's wrong with him. That's what it's all about. And there's nothing he can do about it. So he starts saying, what is this stuff, Scientology, that you're interested in? And you say, well, could you bring any more order to your own life? That's an impingement. I'll tell you the clue to all this. Every time you try to enter order, or enter order, better stated, into a confusion, you blow off some confusion. Now, you think it's people object because you're trying to make them more orderly. That's not true. You're just seeing the confusion come up. So if you just remember this as a rule, a lot of things get explained very rapidly. You try to make things more orderly, and everybody objects to what you're doing. They don't object to what you're doing at all. That's just some of the confusion coming off. You try to enter order, and some confusion will blow off. All you have to do is ignore the confusion and enter more order. And that's the secret back of control. The reason you have to control a PC. You don't necessarily repress the disorder or confusion from coming off, but you certainly hold him there long enough to enter more order in. Now, when you're trying to train or process somebody, very occasionally gets up and walks out. You can't hold him there, you think. Or very foolishly, you start to reason with him. Or you explain why you did what you just did. You're dead in all directions, except one. You've got to enter just a little more order into the case. That's all. And the impulse to leave generally springs from a past exteriorization in a death. So the impulse to leave is what occurs with a little more order entered in, the impulse to leave blows. And if you just tell him to do just one more orderly thing, he very often will come back and sit down. Before you go, make sure you put the E-meter cans on the mantel place. He'd go over to the mantel place, and then you say, now sit down in the chair. And he very often would. You get the trick. You get the trick. It doesn't require reason or anything else. All it requires is that if you got a confusion blowing because you tried to put some order in, and inevitably some confusion will blow off when you try to put some order into anything, all you've got to do is put in a little more order to get the rest of the confusion off. And if you don't do that, you leave half-blown confusion all the time. Now, there are several courses taught. Any validated auditor can teach an HAS course. Academies teach HCA, HPA courses, HCS. And by the way, the modern HCS course is the 20th ACC, right down the groove. That was the high tide of formal auditing. If you take an HCS course, you get the 20th ACC complete. Minus the ACC instructors, but with good instructors. With people who were in the 20th. And we have found out, this is lots of courses, and we have put lots of people through these courses. There's no substitute for being a good auditor, believe me. People think maybe they know a few theories and they've got it all made. No, there's no substitute for it. And we find out that the only training that is good training is the training which is done with almost total 8C. Done. ACC instructors, during the first week of any unit with any new student, appear to be the most monstrous ogres they have ever seen or heard of. They are unbelievable people. They are so unreasonable, it means that they won't write script along with the student. Student says, I'm leaving. The instructor says, good, thank you, sit down. And we find out the more there is of that, not meanness, you understand, but just 8C with an exclamation point, the better auditor we have. Therefore, as training upgrades into its higher levels, it gets tough. Not mean, but awfully exact. Confusion blows off in all directions. We consider that an ACC student that doesn't blow once during the course has something wrong with him. Can't walk or something. That's the way it is. But they just run heavy 8C on the training, and confusion about training goes Fascinating, isn't it? So somebody wants to know about Scientology. They're actually asking for order. They're asking for order. Now, you could go about it this way. You say Scientology is science knowing how to know, and it helps people, and we help a lot of people, and there is some hope, and it's not like modern psychology, and that gets something done and so forth, and you're giving them a fairly orderly approach, but you're talking, you see, in a long stream, and he says, well, he says, I know what that is. That's just like Christian Science, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. That's the way it is, and so on. And you say, no, not quite like Christian Science. Well, what is it like? Yickety-yack. You see, where's the order, huh? Now, you'll find this thing just becomes more and more involved and more confused until he finally says, why didn't you tell me you were psychiatrists and gave people electric shocks in the first place? You know, he just gets that far off the line. Well, putting order into the communication when you tell people about Scientology is the first requisite. That's the first requisite. Put order into the communication. If you understand this principle and practice it, you will actually be doing somebody a tremendous service because you won't let his confusion, his apathy, his can't do anything about it attitude about the mind and his own life and the universe and so forth persist. You won't let that confusion persist. You just say, there goes the confusion. Your honor bound to blow it. Blow some of it. Blow it right there. It's quite remarkable. I started this sort of thing up quite some time ago and didn't realize that it had anything to do with the effectiveness of the situation. Somebody asked me, do you want to know about Scientology? If you want to know about Scientology, well, you'd have to read a book, and I don't expect you to tell me anything about it. Of course, I'd like to know something about it and so on. If I intend to teach him anything about Scientology, I say, sit here. Now, what could you do you think, to make your life better? What do you think is going to happen right about that point? You put him in session. What are the requisites? Here's something new for you, more data. The requisites of being in session are these. Willing to talk to or communicate with the auditor and interested in own case. Those are the two requisites of in session. When we say he is in session, then he is willing to talk to the auditor and he is interested in his own case. Auditors take PCs out of session, therefore, by snapping the interest from own case, PC's own case, to auditor, with ARC breaks, drop the E-meter, drop the ashtray, fiddle with it, set it up 15, 20 different times, ask a bunch of complicated questions they can't follow. You get the idea. That all yanks the PC out of session. Why? Because it takes his attention off of his own case and he goes out of session. Now, he has some background, which is a very poor background of one kind or another. Let's say it's a criminal background, something like this. And he feels he can't tell an auditor about it. Well, I'll clue you. If he can't tell an auditor about it, he'll never be able to talk to it from here to the end of the universe. An auditor is one person you could talk to about it. You wouldn't dare talk to a psychiatrist about it, that's for sure. And probably not to a Christian minister. You'd get a lecture or an electric shock, either one, either way. But you could talk to an auditor about it. All right. This individual, though, can't talk to the auditor. So if he can't talk to the auditor, he's out of session. Now, an auditor could prevent him from talking by every time he opens his mouth to answer a command, chopping him off and not permitting him to answer the command. That would prevent talking to the auditor, wouldn't it? And if that prevented it, he would go out of session. So if you know these things, they're a terrible simplicity, but if you know them, you can actually hold a PC in session very easily. He merely has to be interested in his own case. In other words, his attention is on his own case, not on the room and the motorcycle starting outside and the news broadcast coming in from the next apartment. And he must be willing and able to communicate with the auditor. If he has no voice or something like that, at least get him to write or something of this sort. Now, this communication and this attention on own case or interest in own case give us the first approach in communicating Scientology. This individual has, let us say, a huge training pattern out here someplace, which has nothing to do with accomplishing anything, but has a great deal to do with parts and bits and pieces. You can't do anything about it, but you learn it all. And anyhow, you got this whole sphere out here. Now, the individual must, perforce, have some cognition on some part of what you're talking about as being a feasible and reachable area. He has to be able to communicate at least into that area. At least. You see how this would be? He has to be able to communicate with something inside his own life and blow a little confusion off of it. Because if you don't blow confusion off of him, he'll never hear you. And that's why you have trouble trying to tell people about Scientology. They never hear you. You say, there is something you can do about it. There goes the confusion. Instantly. Get the idea? You don't have him in session. He's liable to get quite excited or quite upset or become very apathetic or something of the sort. Something in him triggers. You say, it's the science of knowing how to know. You could know about yourself. You could handle various difficulties and various things in life. Just by knowing Scientology and so forth. And this individual goes, ooh. And the confusion will start flying off right there. And it is expressed by, oh, well, you mean Christian Science. Yeah, that's a good thing. You're psychiatrist, aren't you? And so I had a brother one time, and he went down to South Carolina and went out in a boat. And when we got out there, we were busy swimming around, and do you believe in skyrockets? Well, that's usually what you hear back, isn't it? Well, that's all you're getting is the confusion. You yourself said, here is an orderly body of knowledge. And it exists. And just by telling him this, you start blowing confusion off someplace in his bank. So you might as well say, sit here. Now, what part of your life do you think you could bring any better order into?
Well, I only ask you about Scientology and so forth.
Yes, I know. Well, I'm trying to give you an example of what Scientology is. Thank you. Now, what part of your own life could you bring a little order into? You made it. You made it right there. It's quite fascinating. It's quite fascinating, this thing called bringing order. It is the, you might say, senior activity of a Thetan. Whatever else he can do, he can bring order. And when he can no longer bring order, he's dead. He's kind of a dead Thetan, if you can imagine such a thing. He sort of lives in a sort of a twilight. He doesn't see anything very clearly. He knows he better not feel. He better blame it all on the body or the society or something of the sort. He himself better not do anything, because every time he wiggles, something kicks in his theta teeth. Every time he says, well, I think I'm going to, something else says, oh, no, you're not. Now, his senior ability is just that, bringing order into it. You have already established a tremendous seniority over the person that you were discussing this with by simply bringing a little bit of order into the communication, giving him an example, putting him, you might say, into session. You say, well, that's a dirty trick. No, it's not a dirty trick. This person's got to get in session sometime in the next 80 trillion years. Might as well be you. Right now. Now, if you were talking to a group of people, and they were all interested in mechanical engineering, and you were talking to them about Scientology, You don't have to talk to them particularly. Just ask them this devastating question. What order could be brought in to the basic tenets of mechanical engineering? They're not going to give you any trouble from that point on. They say, confusion, confusion, confusion. You know, they say, ooh, what order could be brought into it? Let's see. Is there a subject? Let's see. Is there such a subject? Now, just a minute. All kinds of weird things start going on in their mind. Now, you say there are several schools of thought in the field of plastics. Extrusion and protrusion and obtrusion. Now, what order could be brought into this field, and what series of standards could simplify this activity? You're not going to get any trouble from your audience, let me tell you. Now, come right in on the top of that as a lead-in. You've given them a little reality. You say, well, the field of the mind was probably even more confused than that particular field, and Scientology is what brought order into it. Now, this is communication. I think you'll agree. That's communication. Because you have not only observed that there's something wrong with a fellow, you also must have observed that he probably doesn't even know what's wrong. Therefore, you must also observe that you've got to get him at a subjective reality with regard to what can happen and where and how. Now, this becomes very interesting. It becomes a very interesting study as the communication of a new subject. And we have more or less been playing around this for years. There isn't a person here who hasn't played around with this one way or the other, who hasn't worked at it, who hasn't tried to figure out some better way of communication on the thing. And I don't say that this is the ne plus ultra that would hold for all time, but I will say, and I think you'll agree, that it's a considerable advance in this communication. If you'd merely describe Scientology as a subject which brought coordination and order to various mental studies and so on, why, people would say that sounds like must be boss. You know, that must be the subject 3 feet back of the subject's head. Just that. But to communicate with an individual and to bring him forward, you could enter, not an auditing session, but from the point of asking him what order he could bring into his own life. Let's go back to that. What order could he bring into his own life? Let's just compound this. Let's just move this right on up the line. Saying, all right, now where would we start bringing some order into your own life? You just made a session out of it, and you've forgotten all about telling him about Scientology. So is he. You would say, well, where would you start? Where would you start? Is there any place you could start? Yeah, he says, I could die. This is, by the way, why you get as a flash answer what would happen if you solved your case. Out of most people, you get the flash answer, die. You say, when I snap my fingers, an answer will flash as to what would happen if you solved your case. Die, he says. That's in an awful lot of cases. And you say, what order could you bring into this existing confusion that you're living in, or something of the sort? Just ask him to identify the confusions, and he is immediately better for it. Just ask him to identify a few confusions, a few zones. I got awfully accusative about a fellow after I'd led him on for 10 or 15 minutes here not too long ago. And he kept saying, well, there were various confused areas in his life, that was for sure. There were various confused areas. Yes, there was his marriage, and there was his job, and there were his friends that he knew, male friends, and there was his car, and there was his house, and there was his dog. And It was his former government service. Yeah, those were confused areas. And I said, is there any area of order around here at all? Boy, he said, you sure put your finger on something then. By God, he said, I never realized it before. But he says, there's nothing going right any place. I said, now you know what Scientology is, the thing that makes something right somewhere. In other words, apparently there isn't anything, telling somebody new, telling the society new, there isn't anything short of a mild session. There isn't anything short of that. Of course, a couple of Scientologists get together, entirely different thing. Group like this get together, it's yickle yackle and this on the other side and so forth. They're all in PT talking about this and that. You haven't got a communication block. Don't you see? There's no communication block there. Chap just came down from the wilds of somewhere. He said, this is not an exact quote. He said, I just can't stand it anymore. He said, being outside of Scientology. He says, there's nobody to talk to. He says, I got to come back here. Welcomed him back. Get the idea. There's no communication difficulty. Look at the gradient scale of communication difficulties. It's a person on a post where he knows he can do nothing about anything. And if you enter it on that sphere squarely, of course you're entering him on his most difficult point of entrance. Now he knows he can't do anything. Let's say he's a senator. Senators come in, they're all full of beans, they've just been elected, cheering brass bands, you know, they ship them out to Washington, they come in and they see some guard standing down here, and the guard says, what's your name? Oh, I'm Senator Snodgrass from Michigan, I've just been elected. I say, yeah, just a minute, Senator. It's down the line. Yeah, well, you got office 21C, better go see about it. That's right. Senator goes up, you know. Staff's all very happy to see him, you know. They don't know what to do, but they're all happy to see him. Senator says, No, do something about this government. Boy, that's what he thinks. He finds out he has to be up there for the next 2 years before they even let him open his mouth. They put him on committees for the investigation of rats in ladies' boudoirs in the Southern Hemisphere or something like this, and he's had it from there on out. He mentions to somebody he wants to introduce a bill, and the horrible blanched looks on the faces of the rest of the committee that he's on. Boy, he doesn't mention that subject again for some time. He says, I promised my constituents, he says to himself, that I would call up the Interior Department and find out why it is that 82 pounds of rat poison have to be put out in every square acre in northern Minnesota. I promised him I'd find that out for him. So he calls up. Who's this? Well, this is Senator Snodgrass. Oh. Oh, well, yes. He's talking to some bright press boy someplace or another. Well, I want to find out about this rat poison, Senator Snodgrass says. This fellow says, rat poison? Oh, yes, well, we sent you a full report on the Senator. Full report. 8-9 years later, sent him a full report. Boy, you go up to him and you say, now, Scientology could help you on your job. Well, he's already been in apathy about it for years, see? He knows there's nothing you can do. This is the one thing he knows that you can do nothing about, being a senator. That you can do nothing about. Play golf? Oh, sure. Like a breeze. Attend press clubs? Oh, wonderful. Nothing wrong with that. Welcome constituents? Yes, you could do that. But the job of really being a United States senator is a job that can't be done. And you come up brightly and you say to him, now, Scientology would help you do your job. Oh, boy. It's not an area of communication, don't you see? Obviously, to you, it's an area of communication. The man is a senator. He's obviously doing something as a senator. All right, now, that's a little bit off the groove of the one I was going to talk about, which is a psychiatrist. You come up to a psychiatrist and you tell him there's something you can do about the human mind. Oh, yeah? Boy, that's the one thing he knows. He knows that perfectly, and he knows it so well that he has inverted the postulate. And I'll give you the worst postulate now, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's a worse one. So it doesn't matter what you do. There's nothing you can do about it to such a degree that it doesn't matter what you do so that you can do anything. And when you really get one caved in, there's where it goes. You got it? That's the basic criminal postulate. It's the basic postulate of anybody that's been on a consecutive series of failures for a very long time. You know, I've seen some of the most magnificent things happen in savage tribes and so on. Some guy comes in and he's got a broken leg. You know? A couple of guys are carrying him. And they throw him down under a tree. As a friend, they would never have done that with him. But they just throw him down under a tree, you know? Forget him. Let him sit there and rot. Finally, you say to somebody, aren't you going to do anything for him? Oh, him? Oh, guy, grab off some flowers off of a roof tree, something like that, and throw them on the guy. Smile at you. As a kid, I used to look at this with amazement, you know. They knew, because they had no real workability of even binding up wounds or anything. They knew people died. This is the one thing you couldn't do anything about was injury. And they had gone so far down that it didn't matter what they did. It didn't matter a bit what they did. Throw a garland of flowers on him, empty a pot of water on him, put him in a pen with snakes. And all of these wild witch doctor remedies that you hear of are merely born out of that series of postulates, the decline of there's nothing you can do about it. So it doesn't matter what you do, so you can do anything. You get the idea? That's just a total irresponsibility, isn't it? But they actually dramatize this total irresponsibility. Now you wonder why a psychiatrist takes people and throws them under electric shock machines and cuts the brains out and gets a bar and goes through the skull and puts knitting needles in the eyes and so forth and feeds them various pills and wonder what arsenic could do. Get the idea? Same as the garland of flowers. Nothing you can do about it, so it doesn't matter what you do. Now, once in a while, one of us feels that way about a PC. Once in a blue moon, we do. We fish the guy out of a PT problem. See, he's got this hot PT problem. So we run it, and we get it all squared up. We get it all patted in place and get it all squared around. It's feeling good at the end of the session. It's taking the whole session to patch up this one PT problem. We say, good, when he comes back tomorrow, we'll be able to get some auditing done. So he comes back tomorrow, and he's got a same PT problem, only it's different. So we patch up the PT problem, we get it all patched up and so forth, and it goes away, it goes back. Worse PT problem. And we actually get in a frame of mind that we don't care what we run on him. We run this, we run that, we run something else, we say, all right, I wonder if this would work. Assign intentions to a cause of which you're an effect. This is one of the basic reasons for some squirrel processes, you see, like cue therapy or something. Yeah, it's just set up something and just do something, and it doesn't matter what you do, because there's nothing you can do about it. See, these are the decisions born out of apathy. All right, so you say immediately, if a psychiatrist is in this state of affairs about helping insanity, then, of course, you will never have a chance of doing anything to get a psychiatrist to do anything or think anything. Oh, boy. That's not true. Same rule we talked about a moment ago still obtains. That same rule, which is, you got to find some point of entrance where he can bring order. He can bring no order to his clientele. He can bring no order to his patients. He can bring no order to his job. But there must be some small zone of that man's life into which some order could be brought. And it's liable to be the darndest thing you ever heard of. You know, it's liable to be something utterly weird in a case like this. It's way over the hills and far away. He's interested in classifying bark on deciduous trees. And you say, here's this man down there in the hospital all day long, you know, shocking people. You find out there is one part of his life, you've asked him the question, is there any part of your life to which you might be able to bring a little order? Or what are the parts of your life into which you'd like to introduce a little order? You find out this collection of deciduous tree bark. And he'd like to know how to classify it better. It's been bothering him. How does he get it in the right boxes? Now, you can talk from that standpoint. You don't get him necessarily to solve the problem, but you get him to see that there's a possibility of bringing more order to his collection. And you'll be handling this psychiatrist way out here in the left field. You'll be way over here. Won't have anything to do with psychiatry. And yet, inevitably, you Q&A with what the man is, and then you lose. You mustn't lose these men, because they're the nuttiest of all. They're the people who are taking criminal actions against the human mind, because it doesn't matter what they do. Now, if you merely wanted to drive them mad, if that was all you wanted to do, was merely drive them mad, just write one letter and just say several times in the letter, of course you can't do anything about insanity, really, so it doesn't matter what you do, does it? And just key him in, but good. You'd finish him. But it's simpler to go around the other way and fish him out. But it'd be on the basis of what part of your life can you bring order to. The psychologist is in the same thing. He's already been taught thoroughly that you can do nothing about the mind. The mind can't change, it doesn't do this, and it is the brain after all, and there is no source, and all this sort of thing. These things are mostly the things that are taught. Now, they've taught a lot of tricks. They say, well, you can trick somebody into thinking this way if you do that. If you wait on him and act like a mother, why, he'll revive his mother love for you. You see? I know the last guy I waited on didn't look on me as a mother. But you have to handle this person the same way. You have to handle him on the basis of what part of your life does seem a little confused to you. The odd part of it is he'll never tell you psychology. Never. He knows all about that. But he doesn't know that he doesn't know. And that's what's horrible. Now, there's no reason even trying to teach him that he doesn't know. Just find out if there is any part of his life that he doesn't, quote, know all about. And enter there. Lord knows what it'll be or how it'll be, but there is the point. That is the point of entrance. Now, naturally, when you bring a little bit of order in, you blow a little confusion off. And the trick is to monitor it so that you don't blow off the whole preclear. That takes a little delicate touch sometimes. Now, if you put too much order in, too solidly, too firmly, too suddenly, with too much impingement, we just overwhelm him and he never does understand it. What you've got to do is study to put in just exactly the right amount of order so as to blow off a tolerable amount of confusion that you can tolerate and he can tolerate. You just blow off more confusion, blow off more confusion, more order, more order. All of a sudden the guy says, I understand what Scientology is all about. And you say, what? Oh, he says it's just straightening out people's lives. And so it is. Now, an individual who is having bad case trouble, who doesn't seem to be getting anywhere, and so on, can actually be audited in just that fashion. What part of his life could he bring some order to? What could he do to straighten out some portion of his existence? He could be audited like that, and the next thing you know, he'd have some tremendous reality on what you were trying to do with him. It's very interesting. You're not interfering with him or doing marriage counseling or something like that, but he might straighten out his whole marriage, just boom. If you kept asking him what order he could bring into that marriage. He's brought this up as a big problem. Well, what order could he bring into it? And the next thing you know, he's walking with some confidence. There are other ways of handling this. There's a repetitive question you can ask an individual. What have you done to somebody? What have you done to somebody? And he'll just keep saying this and that, and he'll go through lots of bad things and so on. What he's doing is running his overts. And the person who is being a total victim, quote unquote, you can be absolutely sure, has been a total overt. That is the biggest clue in the world. The way to audit him is not make him a victim or let him be a victim, because he's being an effect as a victim. If you get the engram off, you're going to get off the overt act and the motivator and the mental image picture thereof, so it's balanced up. But if you're just auditing him on the surface with repetitive command auditing, HCHCS auditing, fixing him up nicely, doing a good, smooth job of it, all you'll do is ask him, what has he done to somebody? He may have an awful time finding some things, but after a while he'll feel very good. Because what he really feels bad about is that every time he's tried to do anything for anybody for a very long time, he apparently has merely made it worse. And merely making it worse, he finally quit outflowing, quit communicating, stopped communication with his bank, went irresponsible for everything, and practically spun in. And the only thing you've got to show him really is that he can do something to somebody without killing them. Because he thinks if he actually did anything to anybody, he'd kill them dead. And thus it is that you can disentangle somebody's life just on this one little interesting two-way calm basis. You can communicate Scientology to them. You can actually untangle tremendous parts of their existence. You can make them much happier, make them much more able to cope with the world around them. And that's simply to find where they can bring a little more order into their lives. Not where you can bring order into their lives, but where you can get them to bring order into their lives. And then you will win. Thank you.